please rise as you are able and receive our second reading from the Gospel of John, beginning with chapter 10, verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because a hired hand does not care for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. I have received this command from my Father. Receive what the Spirit is saying. Thanks be to God.
Good morning, Foundry. To all of you in the sanctuary and to all of you out there online. Again, I'm Deborah Bombard, and I'm from the Foundry Green team, now the Sacred Resistance team. And tomorrow, as we know, is Earth Day. And I prayed and I thought about what hopeful message I could bring to you today. And as Jackie just said, it's pretty overwhelming on all fronts in our world. And the fact is, every day is Earth Day. We are called to be stewards of God's creation. The United Methodist Church Book of Resolutions states, God's love of the world is an active and engaged love, a love seeking justice and liberty. So we are called to follow God's example whenever we can with whatever resources we have. Again, we are bombarded daily with negative messages of hate, war, starvation, poverty, natural disasters, violence in our own city and metropolitan area, and climate change, and many more things. It's hard to stay the course, and I lose hope, I'm sure you do. So for this Earth Day, I want to remind you, in the chaos of the world, there is hope for the Earth. Out of chaos comes opportunity for creative energy and growth to solve problems. There are a younger generation out there now, like the gentleman in the Netherlands, who's growing fungi and finding out how to make packaging out of fungi, upon which, when we buy these products, we then recycle back to the earth to make more fungi. There's the young man for years and his team who's been out in the Pacific trying to corral that huge plastic lake out there. Certainly, he can't get to the microplastics, but there's just a lot of floating plastics. There's been a lot of naysayers. He continues his research. His team continues working hard, and they are now recycling at least the plastics that they can corral out of the sea. And who knows in the coming generations who else is out there to be an innovator and a problem solver for our world. So, what can you do? The Green Team invites, and the Sacred Resistance Team invites you to support one action today. There is a bill, Senate Bill 2844, which was introduced September 23rd, and it's called the Reduced Act. So what does that mean? Reducing efforts to decrease unrecycled contaminants in the ecosystem. A lot. The bill was introduced by two senators, Maryland and Rhode Island, and one congressman in Texas. This bill was originally presented in 2021 and it failed. So it's now been resubmitted in September of 2023. It has been read and it's in the Senate Finance Committee for further process. What this bill does is it creates incentives to putting a tax or an excise tax on virgin plastic resin. What's virgin plastic resin? It's petroleum turned into a very cheap byproduct that makes all of the single plastic, for all the single plastic uses that we have. It's very inexpensive. You can buy it by the ton. And of course, companies make lots of money making single plastic. So there's 40% of all plastic is from this single plastic usage, and less than 3% of the plastic waste is recycled. The revenues from this tax would support a waste reduction fund to improve recycling infrastructure, which really needs to be reorganized, and reduce marine debris and increase monitoring and cleanup of plastics. Also, the focus in this bill will be on economic and environmental injustice. Certainly the focus of this bill will be going after calling out large companies who certainly have big lobbying arms and can vigorously lobby against this bill. The bill's not perfect. It doesn't solve all our plastic issues, but it's a beginning to cut the cord, so to speak. So in your service program today, on page 11, you'll see a little QR code. If you then put your camera on that QR code and click on it, up will come information about the Reduce Act. It will lead you, if you put in your zip code, it will lead you to your congressperson or representative. And I know if you live in the district where you're not representative, but you still have a person there who has a voice, and make a little note about your support for this bill as it begins its long process. If you have any further questions about that, I'll be outside at the little desk after the service. So I want to end with a little story. There are two brothers who lived in Delhi, India. Not particularly wealthy, but better off than most. They lived with their big extended family in a small apartment that whenever the streets flooded, which flood often, their housing would get mud and water in it. There's a great deal of pollution in the skies of Delhi. And at one point, black kites, which are a type of scavenger bird, like our turkey vultures and black vultures here, were just falling out of the sky because of the pollution. Many of them died, of course, and then many of them were injured. So the brothers said, what are we going to do about this? And with great paradox, here is their government maybe not doing as much as they can about the pollution in their own country, in their own city. But they said, we're called to do this. So they went out and started gathering these injured birds and birds that had also died. They buried the birds that had died with prayers. And then they thought, well, how are we going to fix these birds? They've landed with injuries like broken wings or lacerations. They were dehydrated from trying to exist in that air. And so the brothers taught themselves some basic veterinary skills. So they began fixing wings, hydrating birds, saving birds. And so one might ask also why they were going to send them back up into the pollution. But they saw a problem and they met it. Their neighbors all thought they were crazy, and then the neighbors started bringing them birds. Here's some more injured birds. So one of the brothers was asked, why are you doing this? It's hopeless. It's futile. And he answered, life itself is kinship. We are all a community of air. This same brother has been at Cornell learning more veterinary skills. The international community has responded to this story and helped them build a clinic so they can have a safe and dry clinic in their house for all these birds. So that's a hopeful story, although sometimes it does feel futile. So we are called to be God's stewards of creation on this Earth Day and every day, whenever we can and with whatever resources, large or small, that we have. Happy Earth Day. Thank you all.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Tidris Siddiqui, and I am a community organizer with the Washington Interfaith Network. WIN is an organization built of different faith institutions, mosques, synagogues, churches, including Foundry, working together to organize around the district's most deeply felt issues, from housing to climate to jobs. So I've been organizing around the intersections of climate and all of our different issues for the past 3 years. So when I began organizing 3 years ago, we started doing some listening sessions with residents in the district. And these residents were trying to go through weatherization programs. So they were lower income residents trying to increase the energy efficiency of their home by, getting more insulation, sealing up their windows, their doors, making the homes less drafty. And a problem they ran up against is that contractors were coming in wanting to do the work, but we're finding if they continue doing that work, that their homes would actually become susceptible to carbon monoxide poisoning, because that's how inefficient the appliances in their homes were running. So we couldn't finish those weatherization projects because it would be detrimental to those families living there. So folks at WIN took a step back and really realized in that moment that we need to, when we're doing climate work, we need to be viewing it holistically, viewing buildings as a whole. We know in DC that the fossil fuel emissions, 70% of the district's emissions come just from buildings. So how can we look at our buildings and make sure that they're both energy efficient, but also equitable? As the district transitions to a more of a green economy, we need to make sure that we're bringing all of the district residents along with us through that journey. One of the ways that we're working to do that is through the Healthy Homes Act. I know we've spoken with folks at Foundry about Healthy Homes Act before. Folks have participated in writing postcards to council members and participating in our citizen science efforts with WIN. But the Healthy Homes Act would electrify nearly 30,000 homes in the district, low to moderate income families, helping reduce their utility bills by getting more energy efficient appliances. That's furnaces, induction stoves, electric water boilers. And that helps them reduce their utility bills. But I've also learned through this work that climate justice is never just climate justice. It's economic justice, it's racial justice, it's health equity. It touches on so many different pieces, and I'm hoping today that I can share a few stories with you guys of different lessons that I've learned along the way of how all of those issues are connected. One of them comes early on from when we began doing our citizen science work. And so we would take these methane gas detectors out into the streets. We went around the block, around Foundry, doing the same thing, putting this little gas detector in the street, and then it would give us a reading of how much methane or natural gas is being emitted. So We did that in a neighborhood, River Terrace. It's east of the river. It has primarily low-income Black homeowners, Native Washingtonians, who have inherited their homes for generations. We were in that neighborhood doing the gas leak testing, and within 1 hour, we had found over 30 leaks just in that one neighborhood. One of those leaks was the highest that our little detector could measure, so we went ahead and called Washington Gas to report that leak. And I was with, you know, a group of church ladies that had joined us from the local church barrack down the street. One of the neighbors in front of the house where we found that really big leak was mowing his lawn, so he came out to check out what we were doing. So when we called, we put it on speakerphone so everyone could hear their response. And when we said, we got this reading, it's at 100% of the lower explosive limit, we want to call and report it, can we get someone to come out and take a look? Washington Gas told us, sorry, that number you're giving us is only halfway to the explosive limit. We can't come out and do anything. And in that moment, all of those residents were like, halfway? What do you mean? Are we going to wait till this gas leak in our neighborhood is explosive? Is that the moment that we're going to do something about it? And the very same situation happened in a whiter, wealthier area of the district. We were in Ward 3, found a really high gas leak, called it in. Within half an hour, the fire department was coming and checking out the gas leak. So in that moment, it was very clear that when we're doing climate work, we're also doing racial equity work. We're doing racial justice work. In the District of Columbia, we shouldn't have two neighborhoods that are honestly not that far apart from each other having such different results to the same issue. Later on in this campaign, when we were drafting the Healthy Homes Act, we really wanted to make sure that it was accessible to all of DC residents, including public housing residents. So we took some council members over to Potomac Gardens, a public housing property in Capitol Hill, and we did some indoor gas stove testing. So we took our little device again and we brought it into a kitchen, and we quickly saw that the levels of nitrogen dioxide were 3 times the EPA's limit for healthy air. So what that means is that family living in that home is now susceptible to higher chances of childhood asthma, higher chances of COPD and other respiratory conditions. So it became clear that the work that we are doing is also a health equity issue. While we were in that building, we also were just looking around and we saw that there were a lot of air conditioning units in folks' windows. So we were asking about that. We said, is the heating not that great? Is the air conditioning not that great in the summers? What can we do to help fix that for you guys? And they said, oh, the AC works fine in the summer. We use those air conditioning units in our windows in the winter because DCHA, the Public Housing Authority, they crank up our heating, and it's so boiling hot in our building that we have to turn the AC on in the windows. And then at the same time, folks are facing mold and other issues that come out of having that big difference in temperature, those fighting utilities trying to get a stable temperature in folks' homes. So not only did we find out that there was a huge waste of money being spent, the district was paying for heating and cooling at the same time in that building, but it's just not a dignified living situation for folks to be in. So we took a look at all of those different issues that we were hearing, you know, gas leaks in people's homes, health equity, economic justice. We're looking at all of these things thinking, how can we create a bill that will address all of those things? And that's what's really exciting about climate action. When we are coming up with solutions that give people a new furnace that fully electrify their home, we're not just helping the climate, we're reducing their utility bills. They can use that $100, $200 that they're saving, put that towards their rent. We're changing health outcomes for generations. We're changing neighborhood outcomes. When folks are walking their dog, they shouldn't have to fear for gas leaks and gas explosions. When we act on climate justice, we're really transforming neighborhoods. And when we think about, you know, collectively and individually, what can I do to make a change on climate in the district, there's so many opportunities. One is we're trying to pass the Healthy Homes Act. So if the Healthy Homes Act, it had its first vote in council this past month, and it was a unanimous 13-0 vote, yes, we want the Healthy Homes Act. In the district, there's always two votes on bills, so the second vote will be in May, and we're hoping folks can, you know, show up and show support. But also, we want that bill to be funded, so if folks could call their council member and ask, will you fully fund the Healthy Homes Act? It's a really tight budget year this year, and we, as we're seeing programs like Solar for All and green workforce development programs in the current budget proposal were reduced, we want to make sure that we're really investing in those programs. So asking for money to be restored to green programs in the district would be a really big help. And then also, one of the biggest things you can do to act on climate justice is build community. One of my favorite quotes from Audre Lorde is, "There is no liberation without community." And I take that quote really seriously. I feel like in today's day and age, it's all the more important to stay connected with our community, whether it's you know, reaching out to someone in your pew today that you haven't spoken with before and talking to them, getting to know them, hearing their interests, hearing what their vision for a better, just, more loving district is. Whether it's coming out to an event from WIN, if you see on the Foundry newsletters that WIN is hosting a listening session in a neighborhood that maybe you haven't visited before, coming out, building community with those folks, and hearing their experiences. If we're going and we just need like a large amount of folks to come out for a budget action and stand behind some public housing residents saying, we believe that everyone deserves dignified, safe housing. Just coming and hearing folks, building community, hearing what people have to say and asking them questions can really make such a big change. And it's really how we protect our democracy, by staying connected. So if folks could do two things today, I hope that you walk away with feeling empowered to reach out to your council members about the Healthy Homes Act, and that we continue building community in the district, in our congregations, neighborhoods, everywhere. So thank you, and I hope folks come out. You can reach out to me at the Washington Interfaith Network. You can check out our website, windc.org. If you're interested in getting more connected in WIN's work through Foundry, you can reach out to Jackie, and she'll make sure you get connected. So thank you.